You're listening to Chevy with my new podcast, my first one, 3 a.m. Thoughts. Right now, I'm going into what I'm trying to do, a mini-series. We are going to delve deep into mental illness, what it is like to have it, how we cope with it, and the feelings that are going on inside the heads of those with that illness. This is 3 a.m. Thoughts. We're going to discuss the things that we normally do not want to talk about. They might make us uncomfortable, but nonetheless, they are important. This is me, Chevy, and I hope you enjoy this. I hope you listen. And near the end, you will definitely hear something that is worthwhile. 3 a.m. Thoughts will teach you things, coping mechanisms, and maybe make you think about things that normally people do not want to even have going through their heads. Get uncomfortable and get with me with borderline personality disorder. Good morning, or should I say good evening, to the few listeners that I do have, and I thank you for being a listener. I am by myself today. Matt, I started a new job, and I'm doing this solo, and I think that's probably for the best. I believe that Matt could definitely add some insight into this conversation. However, I think this might be something that I do best while I'm alone. So I would like to get started on a series here where I'm going to discuss certain mental illnesses. And I'm not going to do more than one per episode, I don't believe, but I don't exactly plan much of this as I do it. I work best when I wing it, and that's what I've been doing. I'm not going to lie, my anxiety is pretty high right now. I definitely have a notable level of anxiety, and I'm just bearing with it, man. Here I am. This is Chevy. Of 3 a.m. Thoughts, writing a solo cast. Right now, I said we were going to talk about some mental illnesses, and I'm going to start with the one that I know the most and that I am the most knowledgeable of. That is because I have this disorder. I've had it. I was diagnosed when I was 27, so about 5 years ago. And since then, I have been able to do research on my subject, many different forms. I've looked at many things online. I had been through therapy at the time, but I was very stubborn and I was not taking any advice. I have done lots of YouTube videos, and I've looked at certain healthcare websites and mental health websites. I've looked up what doctors have to say about it. So I'm going to discuss borderline personality disorder, also known as BPD for short. A lot of people have not heard of this. It's a fairly new diagnosis. Most people that have BPD, had been inaccurately diagnosed with things like bipolar or major depressive disorder. Let me see here. I was diagnosed wrongly, with bipolar when I was 20 years old after a suicide attempt, which the details of which I may or may not go into as I go through this today. So I disagree with that wholeheartedly, seeing as how I have a family member who has pretty serious bipolar, and I know the ups and downs of it fairly well. I lived with it for years, and I knew I did not have bipolar. So fast forward 7 years, and I'm finally being diagnosed with something I never heard of called borderline personality disorder. And there is a lot to this disorder. This is no walk in the park here, even just learning about it. As I tried to teach Matt, it took me a long time to show him exactly what it was. I am medicated. I take a powerful antipsychotic medication. You do not need to be psychotic to take an antipsychotic. They are used for many things. There is no proper medication that is used to treat borderline. They really don't have one yet. There's so many different facets and factors to this disorder that it's almost impossible to find a medicine that will cover even half of them. So, what is borderline personality disorder? So, this is a disorder that it impacts almost every aspect of your life, but primarily in the category of relationships. It impacts the way you think and feel about yourself and others. It makes it a lot harder to function in everyday life if you are not medicated and do not have certain coping mechanisms and grounding techniques. You really need to be aware of yourself at all times so you don't accidentally let yourself slip into a BPD episode, I call them. Now, see, these episodes can be in the form, many different forms. It could be paranoia. It could be severe depression. It could be intense joy or happiness. But many times it is anger. And I know for my own self that anger was a very large part of my life for a very long time. I was married for 4 years together with this woman for 7.5 total. And as we progressed in our relationship and I got older, getting closer to my mid-20s, I really started to come out hard with these symptoms, primarily with anger. And I, looking back, I believe that it really truly started to make its way into my life as a abominable presence that says, I am here and I'm not going away. Right around the time that my father passed away, which was in December of 2013, it was a severely traumatic life event that I had to get that fight or flight response on how to deal with this. And I had to buckle up, buckaroo, because you're in for a ride. And I handled it very well, I believe. I was very mature about it. And after the proceedings were done, the funeral was done, he was buried. Now all we have left to do is sit and lament and think about it. That is when my mental health truly started to slip. And borderline tends to come out almost always in young adults. So that would be early 20s, which matches perfectly. So when you have borderline, this inappropriate anger, you're very impulsive, and the frequent mood swings will definitely make it hard to have relationships, both romantic and platonic. So if you feel this anger and you have BPD, the sense is almost overwhelming. People with BPD have intense, overwhelming emotions, far beyond the scale of what most people, I believe, even think is capable. So imagine if somebody severely hurts the one you love the most, and the anger that you might present to them, the sadness when you see that person hurt. This is just a random example. Imagine that level, that intensity on a daily basis with regular emotions. This can mean love. If you love someone, I love Matt and I love him very dearly. It is a very intense feeling of love, connection. People with BPD often have very intense, could be rocky relationships, but the word that I seem to find being used the most is stormy. And yes, I fully agree, because it can go in every direction, okay? So I'm looking at the Mayo Clinic website. If you don't know Mayo Clinic, .org, it is one of the most reputable mental health online sources that there is, I believe. I've heard them sourced by professionals before. So I'm going to quote here a little bit, but I'm going to paraphrase as much as I can. So some of the signs and symptoms are, first one, FOA for short, fear of abandonment. And this is one of the primary symptoms of BPD. That's why it's listed first. Whether it's from a friendship, a relationship with a parent or a sibling or your romantic partner. In my case, it is always the romantic partner. We are constantly afraid that we will be abandoned. I have actually come, personally, a long way with this because I have managed to push those feelings aside now on my own because I trust this person. I trust Matthew. I honestly never felt this level of trust with anybody before, and trust issues are a big thing for me, as they often are with people with borderline. Excuse my fast talking there. Sometimes I don't catch myself, and I'm glad that I did. I tend to speak too fast, and I'm trying my best to control my speech impediment. So, if I had, past tense, an argument with Matthew, we rarely have them. When we do, it's usually in the form of a calm debate, a calm discussion. We may be heated, but we manage to stay calm. For me, that's only because of my antipsychotic medication. So, if we had these arguments near the end of them, or even during, and especially after, I started feeling a very powerful sense of, what if he leaves me now? We had a fight. Does this mean that he doesn't love me anymore, and that he will leave me? I never truly felt this way. I never perceived my fear of abandonment as so strong, or had I even felt it until my wife had told me that she has to leave me. She no longer loves me, and we are henceforth separated. And I honestly probably had not had strong feelings for her for a long time, not in the way I had used to. It was certainly a toxic relationship, primarily on my end, but on both. I treated her pretty badly. And people with BPD often have a history of doing that, unfortunately, whether they want to admit it or not. So I was so frantic to not be alone. I was going through absolutely ridiculous, pointless efforts to try to keep this woman who had already stated her mind very, very, very powerfully. She meant what she said. And I was frantically trying to do anything that I could so she would not leave me. I did not want to be alone. I did not want to be abandoned by one that I loved. No matter how strong the love was, I did not want to be abandoned. I had never experienced such true abandonment and heartbreak before, not to that level. So we were together for 7.5 years, and we had shared some really intense memories together, some really awesome memories, some pretty bad ones, but some really awesome ones too. I can remember, for example, falling to my knees, putting my hands on her sides, her thighs, and with tears streaming down from my eyes like some hurt child begging her not to leave me. And I remember looking up and just seeing her look at me, and the look on her face just said, "I don't know what to say to this," is what her eyes were telling me. She's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you, Ryan?" And to me, this was rational. I was behaving like somebody in a Shakespearean play who had probably taken a lot of stimulants. for a funny example there. And it lasted a long time. The breakup itself took about a month. This for me to accept it. In the meantime, she began seeing other people, and that was extremely hurtful to me. However, I had sabotaged the relationship myself. Like I said, it had become toxic. Part of BPD is self-sabotage, especially in relationships. I'd say that the general pattern is that somebody with borderline will get into a relationship with someone. They fall for them very hard, very strong, and very fast. Their feelings of intensity grow, and they have some amazing times, though they are over the top sometimes. The times are fun, and they have probably really good sex. It tends to happen. And then they self-sabotage. They start saying why the person should not be in a relationship with them. They start doubting themselves so much, and their self-esteem plummets so low that they will indicate this literally verbally, and it pushes the other person away, because there's only so many times you can ask your partner, "Do you really truly love me?" or "I don't think you love me," until they actually stop loving you. And then you have to wonder, once the honeymoon phase is over, if they actually loved you to begin with. And this relationship I have with Matt now is honestly the only one I've had that has passed the honeymoon phase and is still a thriving relationship, because I am extremely lucky. I think that there's some spirit whose hand is on my shoulder, because most people do not get to this level. Also, a lot of those with this disorder are unaware of the symptoms and or unwilling to do anything about them. So I am definitely thankful for this one. So the fear of abandonment is a main part of BPD. It's based on our childhood. Somebody abandoned us at some point. We perceived that they did, in such a way that it really impacted us for the rest of our lives, even if we hadn't realized it. That shit's in your subconscious, man. It's in ways that you don't realize until you either do some kind of really good therapy, which I'll get to later, or you actually manage to soul search and think about yourself strong enough, long enough to know that, to know who you are, to know your memories. Hey, my mic is coming in better. I apologize for the low audio levels there. I am still getting used to this Audacity program. Unfortunately, I cannot afford Adobe Audition, so I make do with what I have, and it's a bit touchy. So there's fear of abandonment, and some of the ways that we do to deal with it. I often will ask, you're not leaving me, are you? And I have taught him about BPD, I have educated him, so he knows how to handle that. He will look at me in the eyes and say, calmly, "No, Chevy, I am not leaving you, okay?" When your partner gets angry about these feelings, that's when your feelings intensify, and that's when you go to the extreme emotions where your sensitivity level peaks. That is another part of BPD is hypersensitivity. I am a very sensitive person, and it does not take much for me to get upset. Certain criticisms or feelings of failure will definitely come into your brain. They will creep up slow and stealthily, and next thing you know, they are pounding in on their way through the door, and we're here, bitch. You feel these things. Now deal with it. So part of this sensitivity is that a lot of things offend us, and offend us in a way that I mean personally. Things that other people might hear and brush it off very easily, I might take as a very personal attack, even though it might not have been meant that way. And that personal attack is something that I'll remember, and I might hold on to a feeling of resentment for that person. I might think about that forever. And a year from then, I will say, they'll say, Brian Chevy, what is your issue? And I'll say, well, a year ago, you said X, Y, Z to me, and that really hurt me. And he said, my God, I don't even remember that. I said, yeah, because obviously it wasn't that important to you, you know, but to us, some things are so important that they're important above the level of normal. So we already talked about the fear of abandonment in a relationship, how intense they can be. And now I'm talking about how when you get with a certain someone that you really like, you have a strong feelings for this person. And I'm not going to lie, borderline is the type of personality disorder where you really can immediately feel love. I know if I love someone right away. I wonder about that in my past relationships if I wasn't just looking for not being alone. But in this one, I knew I felt love, true love that I'd never felt before. So you know your feelings very well. It's just about, do you understand them? Sometimes we don't understand or don't know how to interpret our feelings because they take different forms in our heads. So I idolized Matt. I thought he was the most amazing person I'd ever met. He was above and beyond. He was a fucking king or a god or something to me. And yes, he's proven to me now that he is but a mere mortal, and certainly not the ruler of Egypt or anything. But nonetheless, to me, he will always be my favorite person. The FP is something not often always mentioned with this disorder, and that's that we tend to have an FP, a favorite person, that we will literally turn our phone off and abandon the entire world for days if we need to, just to spend time with him or her. And that can be very overwhelming for a lot of people. So in this case, Matthew had to slowly but yet steadfastly understand what it meant to be the center of my attention, and it's not changing anytime soon. And at first, it was overwhelming for him, and he loved it. He loved the attention. And then when he started to get overwhelmed by it, I believe that he learned how to cope with it because he truly wants to be in this relationship too. And he's at work right now, by the way. I believe I said that earlier. But I'm very lucky to have this person. So when that person upsets you, when they do something that you consider mean or rude to you, when they... Oh, shit. There goes my water bottle. So when they hurt you in some way, I feel, let's say in my sense, not you, but me, I feel a pain very deep that it rests in the gut. And it's like this physical sensation of gut rot that just worsens and worsens until the situation betters itself. It's like, imagine, you know, you're somebody that you idolize, a celebrity or something, for a long time. You finally get to meet them, and they're happy to sign your autograph, and then they see something you wrote maybe, and they completely make fun of you for it, mock you, and call you things that you did not want to be called. You would feel such rejection that it would probably really sting really bad. Well, when Matt is rude to me, we had issues a few months ago. There were some really intense issues. I was hurt very badly. I also had not handled the situation well myself, but I will stick to my guns and say that no, I was not treated right. But we have grown so much since then, and that is amazing that we managed to carry on from having an incident like that. But either way, so when he did these things to me, my self-esteem went so low. Now, I have given up the ideas of contemplating suicide because I have two beautiful children, believe it or not. I do have kids, ages 7 and 9. And if I ever feel these suicidal thoughts, which is part of BPD as well, very common, I picture my children's faces in my head, and trust me, it completely eliminates those thoughts. But the point is that my self-esteem was so low, I literally felt that I had no purpose. I did not know what to do with myself, and in my brain, and this actually, in my brain, and this actually does hold some level of truth, the only thing that could make that better would be him apologizing to me and telling me the good things, telling me why he wants to stay with me, why we are an amazing couple, etc., saying things that would soothe and comfort me. And when somebody's that mad at you, they probably aren't going to soothe or comfort you immediately, at least. And one thing about BPD people is that our emotions can switch very rapidly, sometimes within hours, sometimes within minutes. I might be ecstatic about something, happily ecstatic for 10 minutes, and then I read or hear one thing on the news, and next thing I am bawling my eyes out about this news story. Give me 5 minutes, I'll throw on a song of a certain emotion, and next thing you know, I'm very angry. I'm ready to break some shit. And this can go on in a cycle, an endless cycle, and it's very overwhelming to the person that has it as well. You can imagine what it's like to the people around them, but what about to the one that actually is suffering from this? You get confused. You don't know what emotion is real. You question yourselves. Are my emotions real, or are these just bullshit thoughts in my head? I have come to realize that there are two parts to my brain. There is me, Chevy Brian, and then there's the voices, not actual voices, but these thoughts and feelings that pop in. They're intrusive thoughts. Just like with obsessive compulsive disorder, that are telling me things like, you should be worried that your partner is at home cheating on you while you're at work, because they missed one call, and they didn't answer for 15 more minutes, or return your text or call, and that must mean that there's another person there, and they are cheating on you. Confronting them about this can be risky. You will easily lose your partner if you continually accuse them of cheating. And I guess the difference is actually accusing them, or as I say it, I do trust you, but there is this awfully annoying voice in my head that tells me that I need to check up on this and ask you these questions. And I'm not saying I don't trust you. I'm saying that I want to hear you the words, and that way it'll help me kick those voices in the ass out the fucking door and say, you're wrong, goodbye. And see, right now, even now, I'm getting a little intense talking about this because this is a very sensitive subject for me. I really do not like the idea of infidelity. Cheating on your partner is a gross moral sin to me. my own moral values, that is. To me, it's a massive threat. So, even though I don't truly believe that my lover is or will ever cheat on me, sometimes I get these feelings and I get paranoid about it. Because paranoia is another aspect of this truly mentally debilitating thing. I will often get paranoid about things that aren't real. I've never had a hallucination. I'm not schizophrenic. But I worry. I worry that I'm doing something wrong at work. I worry that when Matt's demeanor changes, I said something wrong, and maybe I'll lose him now from that one wrong thing that I said, which, knowing my partner, trust me, he's a lot more level-headed than that. He's put up with a lot, and I have changed a lot. I have, for the first time in my life, found somebody that I think is so wonderful that I was willing to work on myself and try to change myself in every way possible, as hard as I possibly could. Anyway, so paranoia exists. When I was on bail conditions for a long period of time, I was constantly paranoid about the police pulling me over on foot, like stopping me while being a pedestrian, searching my person, showing up at my apartment. Every time I saw a police car, I had a minor anxiety attack, like a 15, 30 second anxiety attack. All the symptoms of your heart rate speeds up, your breathing becomes very rapid, you start sweating, and you feel a foreboding sense of dread. So these are several things here. I've discussed suicidal threats and ideations. People, your emotions are so extreme that they often will go to the ultimate extreme. And when I was 20 years old, when my symptoms were first starting to exhibit themselves, yes, I had a near successful suicide attempt. I won't go into details, but let's just say that it taught me a lesson. So we're going on to this stress-related reactions, okay? You often feel a loss of contact with reality. Like I said, it can last from a few minutes to a few hours. And these can go from your intense happiness, and then your partner says something that hits you so hard that you go to those levels of fearing they'll leave you, begging for them to say something and comfort you. In my case, I love oxytocin. I think that the release of oxytocin through my brain and relaxing is one of the most amazing feelings I've ever felt in my life. So, and my way to get that, snuggles. I'm a cuddle whore, wicked bad, but only with my partner. I want it all the time, and when that partner wraps her arm around me in bed, even if it's right before work, I say, "Can I have 5 minutes to lay down in bed and put your arm around me? No talking, just laying there." And that is my form of meditation, because in order for me to properly meditate, I need to have my one special person there showing me that they love and care for me. I need that feeling. So if that goes away, if I don't get that, if I'm directly denied that, my feeling of self-identity and self-image will change, and I will go from being positive, feeling, I got this. I will make this day or this night rock. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to kick ass. I'm not going to worry about a goddamn thing. And I'm going to have a good night. And then that, I don't get that moment of solitude, which includes being with Matthew, my partner. I don't get that. I start questioning myself and thinking, maybe I'm not good enough. Oh my God, I'm going to have anxiety tonight now, and my night will be horrible. Who even am I? Like, who am I going to be tonight? Am I going to be more positive Brian, happy Brian, or maybe the Brian that's so caught up in his head, so blocked mentally that I'm not going to speak a single word the entire shift, and I'll lose sleep over this shit. So that also relates to my anxiety disorder, but we'll get into that in another episode. Okay, I'm going to pause it here for a minute. I need to smoke a cigarette and take a quick break, and I'll break it right back to this. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a fictional story, and this is about a relationship where one person has borderline and one does not. So Michael goes online, and he meets a girl named Samantha. Michael has borderline, and he probably doesn't know it. He knows something's up with him, but he doesn't know exactly what. Samantha, on the other hand, is an empathic, nurturing person. She is the mother figure, the caregiver. So Michael, who has been starved of this throughout his life and has been seeking it for a very long time, meets Samantha, and they connect very much so, very fast. Before they meet in person, Michael starts developing very intense feelings for Samantha. And Samantha has feelings for Michael. She likes him. She might even consider dating him. So they meet in person, and to Michael, this is his dream. This is a massive moment in his life. He is, in his mind, putting so much emphasis on meeting Samantha for the first time that it's all that matters. He could have crashed his car, and as long as he had a ride to see Samantha, that car is almost irrelevant. He can deal with it later, if he can compartmentalize. So they meet up, and they have a good time. Michael is guarded, but he opens up a little bit too much, a little bit more than Samantha does. Samantha opens up and makes herself vulnerable at an appropriate level, whereas Michael expresses his vulnerability and his inner thoughts and feelings and emotions maybe a little bit too soon and but too much intensity. Samantha sees this, but she lets it pass and they get together after a month. By this point, Michael's feelings for Samantha are very strong. They are intense. He loves her deeply, very deeply. And when he is at work and she is gone away with her friends or at home, he starts to have paranoid thoughts about her betraying him and maybe even leaving him. So these thoughts manifest into behaviors where he begins acting erratically, having outbursts about things that aren't true. He expresses his fear that she will leave him. And when she tells him he needs to change, he doesn't know how to do it because he doesn't know who he is. He feels empty inside. He is a shell that is comprised of intense, rapidly changing emotions that he cannot control and sometimes does not even understand himself. He gets sarcastic and bitter with her because he's so confused on the inside that he doesn't know how to handle it. And he's now viewing the person that he admired more than anybody in the entire world. He's now viewing her with a feeling of disdain because she does not understand his emotions and she wants him to tone it down and he cannot. So because he cannot do what his favorite person is requesting, he starts getting feelings of self-hatred. He starts to resent himself. He might even cut his arms or do other forms of self-destructive behavior. He probably already is an addict. Michael has been using drugs for a long time. He kept it hidden, but now he feels his emotions so intense, his drug use gets worse, or his alcoholism gets worse, his substance abuse, either way. And so this person who is very vulnerable, very fragile, and very confused, is faced with a situation where he knows he's losing this person he wants so much, but he does not want to feel that hurt. He now is expecting that he will be hurt again, and that is a feeling he does not want to feel. So, using his drugs and or alcohol, he pushes Samantha away after several months of arguing and self-loathing and bitterness and resentment, because this person is not exactly what he wanted. He wanted something exact. He wanted that mother figure, I assume. He wanted that figure that will help him control himself. And now he is out of control again, and he is so upset about it. So he subtly pushes Samantha away and self-sabotages the relationship that was so important to him. His response to fear of separation and rejection, his fear of rejection was so strong that he left her to avoid feeling that again. He felt rejected, but at least he took the first step. So what we see here is an unstable, intense relationship where he idolizes this person, and then when things go awry, he begins resenting them because they are not what they originally were at first. He now is unsure of his identity. He is unsure of who he is, what he wants, his values. He sees himself as a failure. He now starts getting stress-related paranoia. And this may last for a short time or a very long time. And it causes him to send text messages to her, accusing her, or maybe not accusing, but questioning her, what she is doing. Send me a picture of where you are. What are you up to right now? Who's there? Because he's so worried about being harmed mentally in a way that he was cheated on in a sense. And now he starts using drugs. He starts doing impulsive and risky behavior because he is so affected by these emotions. He does not know how to handle them. These are beyond his mental capabilities thus far. So he starts drinking a lot. And the drinking makes the text messages and calls get worse because when he drinks, the feelings go away, but then one little trigger will come out. He will get triggered. That trigger happens. And that's when the phone call comes. And after an hour on the phone of him making no sense, rambling on about things that aren't true, he's splitting, which means he is having black and white thinking. It's either this or not, this or that. That's it. There is no in between. So either you are there cheating on me, or you are there by yourself waiting for me to come home. That is it. Well, of course, there's tons of gray matter there. But in the mind of somebody that does not understand their BPD, they will see black or white thinking. And I often do that myself. I will get to that. So now She is threatening to leave him. She's saying, if you keep this up, I am going to leave you. And so he says, if you leave me, I will kill myself, which is a extremely manipulative thing to do. But at that moment, in his head, in that moment, he feels that is what he would do or should do if he lost Samantha. So he's not lying, but he is at the same time. And either way, these are things that you should not ever say to your partner. So his mood swings get worse. And when he's with her, he feels joy. And then she turns away from him, moves her shoulder in a certain way when he goes to touch her. That shows that she's not really in the mood to be touched. Boom, the rejection hits. He feels rejected just by that little subtle body movement. And now he has mood swings of shame. He feels ashamed and he feels anxious. And so he asks for comfort. But he's already upset her by some minor argument they might have had or something. So he has upset her. And now, because the one that he hurt, he is now asking for comfort from. Because the mood swings are so intense, so from one to the other, they jump from one spectrum to the other so fast. And if she won't give him that comfort, then he feels all alone, rejected, abandoned, shameful, irritable, anxious, depressed. Now, this just leads to more self-destructive behavior. And this is the point where Michael needs to go to therapy. And he needs to understand what is going on in his head that is making him act so, and I will not say crazy, that is making him act so erratic, so impulsive and extreme. Why does he feel these things stronger than anybody he's known? The doctor diagnoses him with borderline personality disorder. If he's lucky. And he doesn't get some bullshit bipolar diagnosis or generalized mood disorder. One moment. Alright, so now he wants to get treated. Michael wants to treat his borderline personality disorder. So, what kind of therapy can he do? Well, one that they highly recommend is called dialectical behavior therapy, DBT. According to borderlinepersonalitydisorder.org, this is the website for BPD, I'm quoting this, dialectical behavioral therapy focuses on the concept of mindfulness or paying attention to the present emotion. That means what is going on right now. The past brings anxiety, brings depression. The future brings anxiety. That's what I have heard before. Stay in the present. Stay in the moment you are at right now. As of right now, I am focusing on one thing. This is me, Chevy. I am focusing on one thing. Describing the process and symptoms and treatments of borderline personality disorder that I have lived with for a long time. I am not thinking about anything else right now. Anyway, it teaches the skills to control these intense emotions. Skills to help him reduce the self-destructive behavior, manage his distress, and tactics to improve his relationships. I did this on my own. I did all of these things by watching YouTube videos. You'd be amazed at some of the very truly uplifting and enlightening things that you can see people discuss on YouTube. I really highly recommend the TEDx talks. They do some really informative, very provocative topics that really have helped me. Also, there are other ones. I don't want to do too many pushes here. I don't want to boost any of the podcasts too much, but so anyway, this proactive problem-solving approach that is a DBT, okay, it includes individual therapy sessions, skill training in a group session, possibly, and phone coaching as needed. So your counselor needs to be able to contact him as needed. It is the most studied treatment for BPD and is shown to be the most effective. I'm not going to go through all of these, but one thing that is very one thing that's talked about a lot. I'm actually going to look this up right now because this is important. Sorry, my typing sucks. It's called CBT, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. So, what is? I apologize for searching while I'm doing this podcast. I'm actually honestly embarrassed. This is one thing that I did not think I have set up. Anyway, my shame aside, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is a form of psychological treatment that has been demonstrated to be effective for a range of problems, including depression, anxiety disorder, alcohol and drug use problems, marital problems, eating disorders, and severe mental illness. So, what does it do? Your psychological problems are based in part on faulty or unhelpful ways of thinking. So they recognize the way you're thinking, okay? And they recognize the pattern, the learned patterns of unhelpful behavior. I know that I have a pattern. For example, it's tough to talk about this, actually. So if I am, if I consume some alcohol, maybe I worked a long, tough shift, I'm already stressed when I come home, and I have not yet truly had a chance to de-stress. And something has been on my mind, say, the way that Matt said or did something or has been doing something that has been bothering me for a long time. I might be the only one that even remembers it. Everybody else, it was pish posh, but to me, it was a big deal. So I will wait an hour for you at home, maybe, and when things are calm, I bring it up to him. And there are times when he handles it maturely and calmly, but there are also times where he might get irritable about it because I have been bringing up this problem and he does not have an answer for me. And let's say the problem is he's hiding a feeling about something. I can tell when things are on my partner's mind that they are not telling me. I can tell when they are thinking hard. So I will bring it up. I will get turned down as far as getting my answers that I want. I am looking for a specific answer, and I will persist very much. I will obsess hard and come up with 10 or 12 different ways to ask the same question, hoping that finally I'll get the answer that I want. But Matt is convinced that he will not tell me this, and maybe he does not want to, maybe he does not know. And I will go on about this. I will through different tactics. I might manipulate. I might play the blame game. I might play the victim, whatever it takes. And if I finally, at the end, do not know it, I break down and tell exactly what I was thinking, exactly what I want to hear, and why will you not ease my mind? At this point, I've probably been using more substances. I have been maybe hurting myself in ways of my Tourette's syndrome, my tics. I'm picking up my fingers, getting anxious. My anxiety is through the roof. And I have now, in a pattern, put myself into a flurry. There's a whirlwind going on in my head that's entirely self-created. That has done nothing at that moment to cause this. It is all in my head. And now I've gone from a kicking the sand to a full-on dust storm, sandstorm. And you better pull the blanket over your head and hide because this shit ain't fun. However, there are ways to cease your behavior and look at yourself from an outside point of view and think and say, what am I doing here? What is going on in my thought pattern? We need to change our thinking patterns, okay? Now, we're realizing that these patterns lead to self-destructive behavior. Quote unquote, people suffering from psychological problems can learn better ways of coping with them, thereby relieving their symptoms and becoming more effective in their lives. Okay, and this is on APA.org. You know, what does that even stand for? It is the post-traumatic stress disorder place. Cool, you know, because you know what? BPD is pretty much always caused by a form of PTSD. Trauma creates these symptoms. So I started to recognize my distortions in thinking. I am creating problems. I'm making these problems up and throwing them at my partner that has done nothing wrong and expecting a comforting answer, and I either get it or I don't. And these are things that we ruminate on that are probably not even true. So if you can recognize these things, you can stop yourself in the moment and say, this is what I'm doing that's not okay. How can I do this in a way that is okay? Maybe I need to cease this, and maybe I need to express my emotions, put a goddamn period at the end, and leave it. So you can gain a better understanding of the other person too, their behavior and what motivates them. So how do I talk with Matt about this in a way that will not trigger him to get angry at me? Because when my partner yells at me or is angry at me, I am triggered by that. Because I don't like my partner being mad at me. I want to be perfect for them. I know I never truly will be, but I know sometimes I don't care. Sometimes I get lackluster and lazy and I just let things slide. But I don't want my partner to think of me as an enemy. And if they're yelling at me, then I did something terribly wrong. I'm a bad boy. I'm going to cower in the corner, tuck my tail between my legs, and piss on the floor. So that's pretty extreme, but that's kind of how I feel sometimes. If I can understand him, then I can deal with it better, and that I will use problem-solving skills. So difficult situations. I think that's cheating on me. He never has. My paranoia is getting bad. He's not answering his phone. So what will I do to cope with him not answering his phone when I'm worried that he is doing something to harm me? And I will open up a podcast or listen to a certain song. I'm at work. I have the luxury of using earbuds at work. One, and it is a fucking lifesaver. I don't know how I would ever be able to do anything without those earbuds now. Once you go Bluetooth, baby, you never go back. That's what I always say. So I put on things to calm my nerves, things that will make me feel the love, and maybe feel myself, confidence in myself. If I can feel self-confidence in that moment, then I know those feelings of paranoia will start to ease and go away, because they come from insecurity. People with BPD are usually severely insecure. There are certain types of BPD. Some of it is just strictly destructive and narcissistic even. But people with low-end BPD and quiet BPD, we are afraid because we are so insecure with ourselves that we don't know what the future holds. We are just waiting and preparing for the next time that we are mentally hurt. And that is a terrible way to live. You live every day in fear. Every day in fear that somebody you meet, maybe everybody, is potentially going to hurt you. You are ready for everybody you meet to be an enemy. And you walk around with your shoulders up tight, your head down, your neck tense, and your hands in your pockets. And you just want to disappear from the world because you are nothing. You don't have a sense of identity. And you just want to shrivel up and fucking die sometimes. Sorry. But if you can learn who you are, figure yourself out, man. If you can figure out who you truly are on the inside, not what anybody else thinks, but you. I was a woman for 11 years with two women, obviously one at a time. And before that, from ages 16 to 20, I only dated men. I considered myself gay. Once I opened up a dating service to both genders, I ended up meeting Matt, and I never thought that I could have a full-time, monogamous, true, heartfelt relationship with a man, because unfortunately, gay men do not exactly practice monogamy very often. It tends to be a common theme, because men love sex, blah, 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 it's a whole other episode. But I did, I stopped looking. I had the third girl in my life came over, and she stayed for 5 weeks, and it was terrible. It was very controlling and manipulative on her part, and I just was a little sad puppy who just wanted mommy to hold him, and it was clashing. It was really bad. I was pretty pathetic, and she was pretty cruel. She was doing, it could have been worse. I've seen a lot worse. It was rough, though. And the moment that she was finally leaving my apartment, she finally got a ride home, finally, I met somebody that I have now been with for almost 8 months. We are doing better now than we ever have been since we met. We support each other. We love each other. We are emotionally open with each other and express our vulnerabilities. We do everything we can to help the other one because we care. I have a relationship that I always wanted. But how was I able to maintain this? I've had a lot of issues, but I have never blown up and yelled at Matt. I have a history of that, and I recognize the issues that I created, my common denominators in my past relationships. I researched my disorder. I researched how to feel and identify who I am. I studied myself quietly, listening to music or whatever it was. I put myself and I know who I am. I know what I like. I know what I don't like. I know what I stand for. I know my political standpoint. I know me. I know me better than anything else in the world. And I am now comfortable with myself. I like me. I'm unique. I'm very different. Nobody in the world is like me. I mean, everybody's unique, but I do believe I'm kind of an odd case. And you know what? I'm fucking proud of it. Why be self-conscious and sensitive about being different and being unique, let's say, when you are the golden egg. Everybody that is hearing this right now, think to yourself, I am the golden egg. I am special. I am amazing. I am different from everybody else, and I'm so proud of that. And I hope if you suffer from any of these things, you can feel the same way. Understand your uniqueness is what makes you special, what makes you better. Do you want to be one of the masses that clings to beliefs and behaviors that everybody else does because you're mimicking or copycatting them? You need to be early. My thing was to learn how much of an individual I was, okay? And I developed coping skills for my issues because I started to realize my patterns and what I'm doing that causes these problems in relationships and within my own head. So I needed to change my own thinking and my behavior. I go back to it many times. I regress. And sometimes I don't catch myself for hours. But if I can catch myself or I can be brought up quick, I can realize that, Chevy, you're doing it again. Think, is this really happening? And I will learn to deal better with these problematic emotions that I'm having. Sometimes one of the most important things you can ever do, if you are feeling your emotions are too intense, stop. That was short, but the deep breathe in, deep breathe out is incredibly effective at stopping your thought process. It will stop my train of thought dead in its tracks. And I can go move on to a new emotion, hopefully one that is less problematic and more helpful. Maybe one that actually I deserve. Because I deserve to be happy. Fuck, I am. I have a lot of problems in my life, but I am happy. I hope this helped you understand exactly what BPD, borderline personality disorder, is like. Okay, so basically, in a nutshell, let's go over this. These are the symptoms of borderline personality disorder. Number one is fear of abandonment. Once we meet someone that we will cling to, we're very clingy. Codependency is a big issue for me. So we are codependent on them, and the idea of them leaving us is the most catastrophic event we can ever think of. So we will do things, sometimes frantic and erratic things, to prevent ourselves from being left alone. We have persistent, intense mood swings. We will shift from extreme happiness to irate rage very quickly, depending on what we hear, read, say. We have thoughts, intrusive thoughts enter the brain, and then that changes our mood, and the people around us have no fucking idea where this came from. They're like, whoa, why is Chevy suddenly freaking out about what? I don't even know. Only you know. And if you can't express your feelings, your vulnerabilities to other people, then they will never know either. Okay, we are very sensitive people. The slightest thing can set us off. Simple as that. Be gentle with us. As George Harrison once said in his song with the Traveling Wilburys, handle me with care. That applies to me. We get paranoid. Enough said. They're often suicidal thoughts and ideations. So people act on them. I almost died. I'm not proud of it. And it's not something I like to share very often. It was 12 years ago. Spent 5 days in the psych ward after that. Just remember, if you ever try to kill yourself, probably 90% chance you will live, which you probably want in the first place. And then you will be locked up, and then you'll be sober, and you will be there. And they will wait until you address your own mental issues before they even think about letting you out. Okay? Feelings of emptiness, not knowing who you are. You feel empty on the inside. You are alone. Okay? There it is. We are impulsive. Impulsivity. Reckless spending. I go to the grocery store with $50 and I say, I can only spend $20 of this because I require the other $30 for cigarettes and gas. And I end up spending $45 because this looks good and that looks good and this looks yummy and that looks tasty. We are very impulsive. We just do things. And then yes, of course we're going to regret it later. But in that moment, I got that dopamine rush. I got that feeling of this is pleasure. This feels good. I feel that natural high. I'm going to buy this right now. I don't care how much it costs. I will deal with the consequences later. And yes, you will. second to last, splitting, black and white thinking. It is either A or B. Either you love me unconditionally no matter what, or you must fucking hate me and you're going to leave me and I'm going to push you away. That is an extreme example, but it happens. In political issues, it is strictly the answer is A or the answer is C. There is no in between to you. Is that or that? And you got to pick a fucking side. And that can cause problems because then you are not giving into the details of the situation. Okay? The last one, and this actually is related to splitting, polarized values and views. For example, I do not like promiscuity. I have done it several times. I thought it was considered many, but then I have talked to people where it is actually on the very low end of the scale compared to some gay men that have had, let's say, over 100 partners. I'm like, holy shit, guy. To me, sex is meaningful. I don't like to do it if I don't have a connection. I consider myself demisexual. I am attracted to people more if I can develop a connection. I was able to have intercourse with other people because I gained a connection first. That was very important to me. And when people are willing to meet up for less than 5 minutes before they start banging, and I just view it as wrong. And that isn't just my example. Everybody has their own views. Everybody has their own moral values that they cling to, the way they were raised. This is ingrained in our brains. If you want to, you can try to change that. I've been working on that myself. People are allowed to do what they want to do. It is your body, your freedom. You know, I'm glad that you're having fun. And that, in a nutshell, on a very controlled level of myself, is what borderline is. And if you're unmedicated, I am medicated. Like I said, it is very important that I take my psych med every night. It makes me very tired. I will have guaranteed sleep. And I wake up feeling refreshed, and my brain feels clear. I don't feel that fog and the confusion and those buildup of intense emotions and feelings that are stacking one upon the other in my head. And I need to start unstacking them, and even looking at one is overwhelming. So if you don't have that medicine, life's hard. You don't know who you are or how you feel most days. And by God, I hope you figure it out. Because if you don't, you'll never really succeed in life. People with BPD can have marriages and successful relationships. And trust me, if you have BPD, don't lie to yourself. A relationship is something that you want very much so. It is what you crave. It is your goal, your destiny. Is to have a long-term relationship. Somebody that understands you and can care for you. Honestly, I bet a lot of people, men with this disorder, are like me, and they are absolutely looking for a mother figure in a relationship. So, if you want success, I tried to give you a basic rundown on the steps. Anyway, I'm at about an hour here. I can't believe I've gone on for so long by myself. Fuck, I'm proud of me. And you know what? It takes a lot for me to say that. So, I'm going to be trying to find guests for the next episodes with other disorders. This one was my story and my knowledge. And I'm going to try to find people that I know, people that are worthwhile, because everybody is worthwhile, that can tell me their story. Because we all have a story to tell. We all have things to say. It's a matter of, do we feel comfortable saying it and with whom? Can we do it? Let's tell stories. Brian Barter, 6'4", BrianBarter, 6'4", @gmail.com. If you have a story about your mental illness to tell me, I don't know what program to use, but fuck, we'll find one, huh? We can do it together online. We'll figure it out, guys. Shivy Coon, 3 a.m. thoughts, over and out. Please stay tuned, because there will be more episodes to come. There are many other mental illnesses out there. Major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anxiety disorders, many, many different types. I'm going to attempt, this was my original goal, this has been my goal for almost a year now, is to openly discuss these things, and by God, I'm trying it. So please keep on listening. There will be more to come. I hope I do not disappoint. 3 a.m. thoughts can be your friend. good morning or good night. Get some sleep. Peace.